Yeah, first of all, I'd like to thank all the co-authors. Julie Foote and Ryan Mushinsky did all the hard work, and Andy Scott and I got to stand around and wave our hands. When we think about forest cover loss, we often tend to think that this is primarily a problem in the tropical regions, but this fairly recent paper that came out in PNAS by Hansen et al. Showed that the U.S. actually has the highest percentage of gross forest cover loss of any country in the world between the years 2000 and 2005. And that rate of forest cover loss is about 6% during that 2000 to 2005 interval. And these forest cover losses are due to myriad factors like insect outbreaks, disease, storms, and so on. But they indicated that the vast majority of this gross forest cover loss was attributable to harvesting. And although most of this forest cover gets ultimately replaced through planting or successional processes, and the U.S. forests still manage to function as a net carbon sink to the tune of about 200 to 300 teragrams of carbon per year, the removal of forest cover and biomass still represents a major ecosystem disturbance. Probably the most intensively harvested area in North America is the Gulf Coastal Plain. And here, gross forest cover loss ranges between about 5 to more than 10% during this 2000 to 2005 time period. But in this geographic area, our knowledge of ecosystem responses to timber harvest still remains pretty limited, really, compared to other forested regions. So, as many people have shown, forest harvest often results in warmer, wetter soils that favor microbial activity and accelerate carbon and nitrogen cycling processes that can increase losses of both of those elements. But there have been several recent meta-analyses and large-scale reviews that suggest harvesting, at least in temperate forest, has little or no effect on soil carbon and nitrogen stores. But of the hundreds of data sets that have been looked at, there's only a few from the Gulf Coastal Plain region that have been included. So it's not really totally clear if timber harvest effects on carbon and nitrogen biogeochemistry in this coastal plain region will conform to the responses that have been documented in other biogeographic areas. So the purpose of our study was to quantify the impact of forest harvest method, soil compaction, and their interaction on soil carbon and nitrogen stores and microbial biomass in a loblolly pine forest 15 years after harvesting and replanting. And the study area we'll talk about today is in Crockett National Forest in eastern Texas, and it is part of the LTSP program that Andy just described. This particular experiment was established in 1997 and 1998. The climate is very warm temperate, mean annual temperature is 19 degrees, precipitation is about 1,135 millimeters per year. Elevation is about 100 meters, and the topography is quite flat. And the soils are fine sandy loams that classify as oxyacquic glossodelphs. And this shows the location of the Groveton site over here in eastern Texas. And you'll note that it's in the southwesternmost extreme of the eastern forest biome region. And the fact that it's at its kind of bioclimatic limits here suggests that this area might be particularly susceptible to the effects of disturbances like timber harvesting. Here's an aerial view of the Groveton site. There's 27 plots that represent all the different LTSP treatment combinations. And more recently, we established three unharvested control plots where the tree age is approximately 70 years. And the experimental design is the classic LTSP approach. There's three tree harvest methods: bowl only, whole tree plus forest floor removal, and then there's three levels of soil compaction: none, intermediate, and severe. And again, these plots were harvested and replanted around 1997, 1998, and each of the plots is about 0.4 hectares in size, and the tree spacing is 2 meters by 2 meters. We sampled quarterly from March 2011 to March 2012, and on each date in each plot, we quantified litter and collected the litter. We took soil cores to 10 centimeters, so all the soil results I'll mention are in reference to the 0 to 10 centimeter increment. We isolated fine and coarse roots from the soils, and we quantified carbon and nitrogen and delta N15 values in the litter, roots, and soils. And we also measured microbial biomass by the fumigation extraction method. And we found that there were no effects due to the soil compaction or herbicide treatments that were part of the original LTSP setup. And so we basically pooled all the analyses and just analyzed them with respect to the effect of harvest treatment and the effect of time. Oops. This just shows the climatic conditions during the study period. During the first year of the study, the rainfall was about 40% lower than the 30-year mean. And during the latter portion of the study, during 2012, the rainfall was about 36% higher than the long-term mean. And temperatures during the first year were about 1.5 degrees higher than the mean annual temperature for the region. And then during the second year, the temperatures were about 3.5 degrees warmer than normal for that particular time period. And here's soil moisture to a depth of 30 centimeters, and you can see the soil moisture pattern tracks the rainfall. And you'll note that the rainfall is pretty high during the beginning of the study and then again towards the end of the study. And in between, there was a marked drought that occurred. So here's the data for root carbon and nitrogen pools. And across the top, we've got the fine roots. This is fine root carbon, fine root nitrogen. And across the bottom, we've got the coarse root carbon and nitrogen. All four of these panes, there is no significant treatment effect. So root carbon and nitrogen pools were not affected by the tree harvesting practices. But there were significant temporal effects. The root biomass did fluctuate significantly during the period of study. The fine roots had a big burst of biomass in spring and early summer, and then kind of petered out after that. And then the coarse roots produced or had the highest levels of biomass towards late summer, early fall for both carbon and nitrogen. Litter and soil carbon and nitrogen pools. The litter pools are across the top and the soil pools are across the bottom. Let's talk about nitrogen first. Both litter nitrogen and soil nitrogen were significantly different with respect to harvest treatment. The bowl-only treatments had the highest amount of litter nitrogen and the highest amount of soil total nitrogen. And the lowest amounts of litter and soil nitrogen occurred in the whole tree plus forest floor removal. And these also varied significantly with respect to time. But with litter carbon and soil carbon, there were no significant treatment effects. There's clearly a trend there towards higher values in the bowl-only treatments, but there is no statistically significant difference between the harvest methods. But these treatments, too, also differed significantly across time. Microbial biomass was also significantly impacted by harvest treatment. The largest soil microbial biomass pools were in the bowl only treatments across the top there, and the smallest microbial pools were in the whole tree plus forest floor removal. And microbial biomass was relatively high during spring and early summer and then kind of tapered off for the remainder of the year. And I think we just kind of missed the rise in the biomass pool during the following spring. The microbial biomass pools were correlated with a variety of environmental factors. The strongest determinants of the microbial biomass were soil total nitrogen, soil organic carbon, and fine roots. Those all had moderately high correlations with the microbial biomass. But litter, temperature, and precipitation also correlated with the microbial biomass. We also looked at soil delta N15 values as a potential indicator of disturbance effects. In soils, when nitrogen inputs are the same as the nitrogen outputs. The soil's in steady state with respect to the delta N15 value and remains steady through time. But if there's a disturbance, for example, where outputs exceed inputs, the delta N15 values should rise. All the nitrogen-losing mechanisms in soils tend to cause strong isotope fractionation and leave the soil enriched in delta N15. And if there's a disturbance where inputs are greater than outputs, we would predict that the delta N15 values would decline because all of the inputs that are known into ecosystems tend to be highly depleted and near zero or even lower. So based on this, we predicted that with the disturbance of tree harvesting, that the soil delta N15 values and other ecosystem components would increase following that event. And in fact, that is what we saw. here's the delta N15 values for coarse roots, fine roots, litter, and soil. And first thing is that the delta N15 values were always lowest in the bowl-only treatments. And those are the treatments that lost the least amount of nitrogen. And the delta values were always highest in the most severe harvest treatments, the whole tree plus forest floor removal. So significant treatment effects across the board here. And there were also significant seasonal effects that are kind of interesting, and I don't totally know how to explain. The pattern for soils is completely opposite the pattern for the roots. I'm not quite sure what's going on there. But the main thing is that the delta N15 values are enriched in the most severely disturbed treatments. And they remain enriched 15 years after these treatments were installed. Andy was very wise to collect soils at 5 years and 10 years, and so we had some archived soils that we could draw on. And then we also sampled soils from unharvested controls to kind of reconstruct the history of what's happened over the past 15 years. And you can see in the old growth forest, the carbon concentration is about 2,100 grams per meter squared. And then within 5 years of harvesting, the amount of soil organic carbon dropped by about 50%. And between years 5 and 15, you can see that organic carbon has reaccumulated linearly during that time period. And the rates of accumulation are a little bit higher in the bowl-only treatment and the whole tree harvesting. They're right around 100 grams of carbon per meter squared per year. And in the whole tree plus forest floor removal, the rates are a little bit lower at 86 grams of carbon per meter squared per year. But you can see that the bowl only recovers faster than the other two treatments, and it's actually pretty much recovered with respect to the original amount of soil carbon. The other two treatments, the more severe harvest treatments, still probably have about 5 or 10 years to go before they're recovered back to the original amount in these unharvested controls. We did the same thing with respect to nitrogen. And you can see that the original nitrogen content of the soil was about 100 grams of nitrogen per meter squared. And then that dropped by, again, roughly 50% within 5 years after harvesting. And that was then followed by recovery towards the original concentration. And the bowl-only treatment has been recovering at the rate of about 4 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per year, and it's basically the same as the unharvested control. But again, these two more severe harvest treatments still have a decade or more to go before they reach the pre-harvest levels. Delta N15 values were also quite interesting. Again, with disturbance, you expect delta N15 values to increase. And we did show that there's been nitrogen losses from this system. And the delta N15 values reflect that beautifully. In the unharvested controls, the value is about 1.75. And then within 5 years after harvesting, the value shot up to about 3.2 roughly. And then they've been recovering for the last 10 years. And recovery has been most rapid in the bowl-only treatment and slower in the whole tree and the whole tree plus forest floor removal. And again, these guys still have quite a ways to go before they get to pre-harvest levels. And this makes good sense. Again, with nitrogen loss, you expect the soils to become enriched. And then as nitrogen reaccrues in the system, most of the potential nitrogen sources that can lead to accrual are depleted at N15, and so they start to go back to the original unharvested differences. I'm kind of puzzled about where the nitrogen is actually coming from in the recovery over here. You know, atmospheric nitrogen deposition in this area is only about 0.3 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per year. Maximum rates of asymbiotic nitrogen fixation are known to be less than 1.2 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per year. So we can really only account for about half of the recovery with kind of known mechanisms. So I'm wondering where the other nitrogen is coming from, and I guess it must be getting pulled up by the deeper roots and redistributed back into the surface soil through litter fall and root turnover. So do these nitrogen losses have any impact on forest productivity? And Andy presented this data already, but it kind of looks like it does. The bowl-only treatment has about 164 cubic meters per hectare of stand volume. The whole tree plus forest floor only has about 144. The differences in stand volume are not significantly different between the treatments, but if you do a correlation analysis, those stand volumes do correlate with current levels of soil nitrogen. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out 5-10 years down the road. So just in conclusion, all the forest harvest methods that we looked at reduced soil carbon and nitrogen by about 50% within 5 years post-harvest relative to the unharvested controls. And the impact of the harvest methods are still evident 15 years after cutting and replanting, suggesting that there is a strong legacy effect in this area. The more intense forest harvest methods resulted in greater carbon and nitrogen losses and reduced microbial biomass. And so harvest practices that minimize organic matter removal and lessen the impact on soil carbon and nitrogen and decrease the time required for recovery of these pools. And then lastly, since soil nitrogen is limiting in these southeastern forest lands, the harvest methods that conserve nitrogen should help to sustain primary productivity in the future, maintain the carbon sink strength and ecosystem services in this region. Yes. The litter was raked. And raked and removed. And supposedly there. It's not a normal harvest practice. It was included in the experimental design just to examine the effects of organic matter removal. I am seeing in the literature that there's a lot of interest now in harvesting forest litter as a source of biofuels. You know, I don't know if that'll ever come to pass, but might not be a great idea. Yes? That's right. I don't know. Andy, would you know how much nitrogen gets removed when the trees are harvested? Yeah. That's an excellent point. Yeah. We're just looking at the soil system and not what might be involved with the plant part of the system. Yes?
I'm reminded of the sandbox experiment at Hubbard Brook, where they found that there was actually about a couple hundred kilograms of N per hectare accumulated in those with pine planted.
Is that right?
Suggest maybe there is some, as opposed to asymbiotic, maybe some symbiotic organisms in association with pine that actually have the ability to accumulate end or some fairly high rates.
Yeah, that'd be. Well, there's no known symbiotic nitrogen fixers in the system, but you know it'd be interesting to see if maybe pine roots do have some sort of associative bacteria that fix nitrogen. It's an interesting thought.
Do you have the interesting signature of any
We do now. Ryan, can you comment on that? What sort of values are we getting at depth and
roughly 8 at depth. So that's 2 meters.
Uh-huh.
8 per mil as opposed to 1.5-ish at the surface.
Mm-hmm. And so if the soil's getting more depleted, the surface soil is getting depleted with time, they're probably not getting that nitrogen from deep in the profile because it is relatively enriched at depth. Sure, as long as they're easy.